Welcome to Open Minds, the weekly sermon podcast from Christ Church Anglican Cathedral in Vancouver, Canada. Reflections provoking thought at the intersection of faith and culture.
So that hymn of Mary, which we know as the Magnificat on this day, which is set aside in the church's calendar as the feast of Mary, the mother of our Lord. I'm not sure if you get to read the Christ Church weekly internet posting called the Spirit of the Time, apart from the one that we have for St. Bridget's, which is the Community Life weekly email. Anyway, this week, our Helen, wrote this. She said, I often wondered if one of the greatest mysteries of the Christian faith isn't that Jesus was a perfect human being, but that God wasn't perfect, wasn't fully aware of God's self until God became flesh and experienced the fullness of the human journey. But of course, that could get us in trouble with some people. But what Helen's doing, actually, is she's asking us to test her hypothesis that that about mystery, God wasn't perfect, and not perfect until fully aware of God's self, which happened at the incarnation. That God became flesh and experienced the fullness of the human journey. And then she also, in the little article, because it is it's tied into a pastoral visit that she was talking about, also describes perfection. And she says that according to the mothers and fathers of the Christian Church, perfection is seen as becoming more aware of who God created you to be, with your warts and all, and loving the people around you into becoming more aware of who God created them to be. And she adds that God, of course, is not afraid or turned off by imperfection. God is not turned off by our struggles to embrace or understand our humanity or the humanity of people that we love. Well, let's test that with Helen. There's an ancient story which I'll sort of half tell and half read to you. It's an ancient story about creation, and as you know, stories, you know, can be embroidered and grow and all kinds of things. I'm not sure how much this one has grown, but listen to it. God, as everyone knows, created the heavens and the earth and everything in them. And as we are now aware, God created them through the use of words. For words, of course, are power. Let it be done, God proclaimed, and it was done. And everything God made was good. Well, God was especially proud, so the story goes, and loving of the woman and the man he made, because he had breathed into them a part of himself. He breathed into them his spirit. But not surprisingly, the devil was jealous and angry. So one day, when God was enjoying the woman and the man, the devil casually happened to walk by, and he sauntered up to God and asked God what he liked so much about these creatures he had created. And when God opened his mouth to speak, the devil craftily put a bond on his tongue so that he could not speak. God, not able to talk. And since God's creative power was in his words. The devil had now bound that power. The devil laughed at God and quite had his way with the woman and the man. Well, as some eons went by, because as you know, in these stories, time is not that important. As some years went by, the devil came back to mock God, which of course the devil can't resist because it was in his nature. And he came by to mock God, and he scoffed at the silent deity and taunted this helpless God. And God responded to all this by holding up one finger. One? Asked the devil. Are you trying to tell me that you want to say just one word? Is that it? Yes, God nodded, pleading with his soft eyes and urgent hands. And the confident devil thought to himself, well, I don't suppose that even God could do very much harm with one word. Okay, he said, and removed the bond from God's tongue. And God spoke his one word. He spoke it in a whisper. He spoke it for the woman and for the man, and it brought them great joy. And it was a word that gathered up all the love and the forgiveness and the creativity that God had been storing in his heart during the time of the long silence. And the word he spoke was Jesus. So it's a story of creation, and it's a story of incarnation. Don't we think that God, all of God, if you like, the whole God, what Christians call the Trinity, might only be complete when God speaks the incarnation, speaks the word into being? I imagine that could upset us if we keep Jesus kind of safely locked just in the pages of the Bible or safely locked in church. But what do we do with theories, or what do we do with mysteries? In fact, what do we do with any complexity that seems too big for our minds to understand? A very common solution for many people is to reduce the complexity by finding some answer out there to the issue. And finding an answer out there might be finding an answer in my preferred reference sources, like maybe one TV program only, or only one group of written resources, or one group of friends, or keeping away from people that are disturbing or who speak things different to what I know. Or, like for many Christians, using the Bible as a literal question and answer book. That would be an example of trying to find an answer out there, so that whenever there's a complexity that is too difficult to put my mind to, I look for someone else or some other thing to provide the answer. But when I try to find answers to complex issues only outside of myself, then I risk providing one-dimensional solutions to multi-dimensional issues. And so, both in the spiritual life and in life in general, I need to look inside myself, and I need to wrestle with the difficulty, and I need to engage. And that might mean first engaging with myself and the awareness of who I am. And it might be engaging and arguing with God. And it might be wrestling with the difficulty. It might mean keeping quiet for long enough for God to speak, which is quite difficult for many of us. It might be study. It might be looking for an answer in the most unlikely place. It may be looking for the answer where I don't normally find answers. It might be accepting what I find difficult to accept. It might be going to the place that I've never been. And the mysteries of God, these things the mystery that Helen was challenging us to test, the mystery of what does incarnation mean? What does it mean for God to become human? It seems that these things don't have single dimensional answers. They don't offer answers which can lead to dualistic solutions. God's answer to complexities which humans get up to and which we don't seem to learn that much from over time, God's answer seems to be incarnation. And so God saying, if you like, I go and I live with them. I pitch my tent among them, which is one of the literal understandings of the word made flesh and dwelt among us. I feel it. I do it with them. I enjoy it with them. I agonize it with them. I suffer it with them. With them all the time. When I think of the reason of why the church sets aside days in its calendar, and the church calendar is full of them, special days for honoring holy people in its calendar, it is because, if you pick up Helen's point, it is because those people became more and more aware of God who created them through their joy of knowing God, sitting with God, waiting with God, suffering in their faith, standing up for the truth, being punished for the truth, realizing that they couldn't see the whole thing at the beginning of the journey, and being prepared to wait, and then loving the people around them into becoming more aware of who God created those people to be as well. And so I benefit from the example of the saints and the mystics, some of whom are still alive, through meditating on their story and seeing how it is that they struggle through this thing, how they find God. And Mary demonstrates this kind of awareness. She just demonstrates this awareness as she in a very particular kind of relationship, contemplates Jesus born into the world. And the hymn that she sings, the hymn called the Magnificat, holds some of her responses. Even though it seems that she says those words very soon after she becomes pregnant, very soon after the Annunciation, she goes to visit Elizabeth, and the child in Elizabeth's womb responds by jumping, as it were, and she knows that something is there in the presence of Mary. So Mary has this very interesting way of living the incarnation with us. Can she know all that she was going to experience? Being pregnant with Jesus at his birth, the effort of bringing him up, watching him grow, watching the mystery of who he is unfold. Well, of course she couldn't. A young girl. Was she touched by God? Indeed, she was touched by God. But of course, the gospel story that Luke gives us is only written at the end of the first century. And so the writer has the benefit of observing Mary at the time, through the time, and after it all, you know, at the announcement, living this thing with Jesus all the way through to the end. And then, not the end, So you might say, well, is there a prophetic message in her proclamation? Of course there's a prophetic message in her proclamation of the Magnificat. She is talking about God's actions from time of old. She's also talking about God doing something new, turning the world upside down through this incarnation. But Mary really is the teacher of the mystery. She's the teacher of the mystery of the incarnation because she is present to it step by step. And in a way, she can't get away from it. She can't get away from it because he's in her. And then when he's not in her, it's her boy. It's her son. She's watching and she's holding and she's hoping. And so from feeling him move in the womb and giving birth to him and feeding him and observing him growing up and all those things, seeing his divinity begin to be revealed as it happened, and his trial and his suffering and his death and his rising and his ascension. This is her boy that is experiencing this. And she has doubts and she has fears and she has joys. So this incarnational relationship in Mary is very special. And what she gives us in her pondering and her observing and her responding, some written things, which you know the Gospels put there for us, and some are only gained through pondering the story, praying it, staying with it. There's a phrase used about the parts of Jesus' life, which are not written in the scriptures, called pondering the hidden life of Jesus. I think there's a whole space here in the Gospels about the hidden life of Mary. And we ponder her experience of the incarnation, of her boy, her son, and her Savior through being with her and staying there. It's like the stories that we experience. It's the same as the stories, if you like, from mothers and grandmothers of refugees watching from Libya to the continent, from the southern states to the USA. Like the stories of indigenous mothers and grandmothers having their children and sometimes their grandchildren taken away and watching them suffer and suffering themselves, and many dying. And they have doubts, and they have fears, and they have agonies, and they have joys. It's like incarnation. And this is how we get in touch with the gospel mystery, and how we open ourselves to learn through it and be changed by it, which is God changing us. So, certainly there is a personal response to Jesus through baptism, through my yes to God and my yes to Jesus, and however you understand being born again into Jesus. And then there is the being born again and again and again and again and again. And these rebirths come through my pondering the mysteries and pondering the complexities of the Gospels and through the experience of holy people, if you like, through the experience of the Marys, whose stories of incarnation we ponder and stay with. And so we experience him through our experience with him. And we experience him through their experience of him also.
Thanks for listening to the Open Minds podcast. For more information on the Cathedral, its ministries, and how you can get involved, go to www.thecathedral.ca.